Good morning. Today's Daven Gittin is Nun Mor Mem Tes Amud Beis, and we started just yesterday the fifth parak of the Masechta. We have gone over a number of takanas that were made by Chazal, and so this parak having almost nothing to do with Gittin, although that's not totally true, but mostly totally irrelevant to the topic of Gittin, but is going to take us to the topic of takanas, various takanas that were made. In the Mishnah yesterday, we covered eight different takanas that were made, and most of them had to do with finance and mamonos. The takanas that we spoke about is built on a system of grading land. Lands receive a grade. Your best land is Idis, your middle land is Beninis, and the most inferior of lands is what's called Ziboris. I'm gonna definitely one point in my life figure out what exactly the words mean, where exactly the terminology comes from. But regardless, so those are the terms that are used to describe best land, middle land, and worst land. And as you probably heard me say yesterday, and I'm going to do it again today, I'm just going to go with the letters A, B, and C. Okay, it makes life a lot easier. And I don't know about a lot, but it's a system that works. So now, what did we learn? What did we learn yesterday? That if you are mazik somebody, so you have to pay him A. If you are a balchov and you're owed money by somebody, you get B. And ksuvas isha, and you som him, so they're only going to have to, well, the ksuvas isha, she'll collect C, and you som him whenever they're going to have to pay outstanding debts from their father. In other words, what they inherited was accounts payable. So then they're only going to have to give out their C land. So these are the halachas that we learned yesterday, and others as well. Numerous other takanas, eight in total that we went through in yesterday's Mishnah. Yesterday's Gemara's discussion revolved around a better understanding of the first three of the takanas of the Mishnah. And let's pick it up where we left off yesterday. Ksuvas isha b'ziboris. So when it comes to the ksuva of a woman, so she will be paid with ziboris. Now, what did we learn yesterday? She's going to get paid with ziboris. Why? Because we don't have to encourage her to marry that much. Meaning, obviously, the entire institution of ksuva, a prenuptial agreement, is there just simply to provide for her protection and to give husband pause and think a moment before having to divorce his wife. But the truth of the matter is that it's not the ksuva that is that is going to incentivize her to get married. Women, the Gemara said yesterday, women have a natural inclination towards marriage. They would like to be married. They don't need to be that strongly encouraged. And therefore, when the ksuva payout is going to be paid out, so it doesn't have to be paid out with A or B, it could be paid out with C. This is what we saw yesterday, and the Gemara now is going to try to make a distinction in different types of ksuvas. Ksuvas isha b'ziboros, amar mazur shebrei derav Nachman. So we are on Mem Tes Amud Beis, and it's about two-thirds of the way down, set the two dots. The following distinction at least is going to be attempted by Marzutra. Lo amar nala mi yasme. The idea that you're only going to be paying ziboros is only when? Yasme. Marriage can end in one of two ways. Either it's going to end with divorce or death. Obviously, when we're talking about death, so therefore, who is the payer of the ksuva? It's not obviously the husband; he's no longer there. But obviously, it's going to be the estate. The estate now is going to be the payer. So now, when the estate is going to be the payer, so then they're going to have to pay ziboris. Ava minedi de bebeinonis. But if the marriage ended through divorce, and now the payer is going to be the actual husband, the ex-husband, so he's going to have to pay using beinonis. And he will not be afforded the ability to pay with ziboris. This is a distinction made by Marzutra. Now, in our Mishnah, we didn't hear this distinction. So that's what's called a chiddush, meaning Marzutra is saying something which is novel to his time, and is this something which we can support? Can we get behind it? First of all, we have to understand it. Miyasmi, my area, ksivasisha, afilo kol milanamida, tanani, nefraim nechasim yisomim elam nizaboris. So, So the Gemara is bothered by the following. Meaning, if we're talking about the payer of the ksuva being the estate, so the Gemara says, what are you talking about? Ksuvas isha is the only thing that the estate is going to be paying via ziboris. Ksuvas, every account payable from the estate is going to be paid using ziboris. So that's the Mishnah. Ein Ephraim and Chasim Yisomim Elamin Ziboris. So Elalav Minei. So therefore, when the Mishnah is talking about ksuva, the Mishnah is not talking about the ksuva via the estate. because everything paid by the estate is going to be Zibaris. So if the Mishnah is trying to teach us something new and novel, the Mishnah would be talking about Ksuba being paid by the husband, by the ex-husband. So La Olam Yasme. So Ksuba Tisha Itzrich Le Sakadat Chamin and Mishum China Akila Rabban and Gaba. So Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says that, well, maybe we can argue that the Ksuba Tisha payout through Ziboris is going to be only when it's the estate. We could say that. And even though it's normally true, it's the default anyway that the estate pays with Ziboris. I might have thought that when it comes to Ksuvas Isha, maybe the estate should be paying not Ziboris, but rather Beinonis. Again, the idea of Chayin. Chayin over here. Now, admittedly, Tosfos is going to say it a little bit differently over here, but I'm just going to offer a simple pshat. And that is, chayin means that we want marriage to be attractive to women. Meaning we want women to be in a position where they're going to have some sort of security of mind, some comfort in thinking that marriage is good and they're going to be protected. And so therefore, I would have thought that maybe in order to give them more assurance and more comfort in marriage, maybe their payout should be with Beinonis. That would have been a Havamina. That's why the Mishnah has to tell me that even though the payout is coming through the estate, so still, it's going to be Ziboris, not Beinonis, and that's enough. Meaning, that would be enough of a payment to make women comfortable. I'm Rava Tashma. Okay, so here's what we're going to do now for the next, let's call it 10 minutes of today's daf, and that is, we're going to litigate in terms of whether or not Marzutra is right. Again, Marzutra posits the following, that when it comes to Ksuvas Isha, so, and the payout of Ksuvas Isha, despite the fact that we learned on our Mishnah, that the payout is going to be used, the properties that are going to be used are going to be Ziboris payouts, Ziboris properties for the payout. So Marzutra says that's only if the payout is coming from the estate, i.e. the husband died. But if the husband did not die, and it's the husband himself paying his Ksuva, so then he has to pay with Beinonis. This is the distinction of Marzutra, and the Gemara is going to try to see whether or not supportable, not supportable. I'm a Rav Atashma. Consider the following. Rebbe Meir Omer, Ksuvas Isha beBeinonis Miman. Okay. Rebbe Meir says that Ksuvas Isha comes from Beinonis, meaning Rebbe Meir is a dissenting viewpoint. Right? We say Ksuvas Isha is Ziboris. Rebbe Meir disagrees, and the Gemara now wants to understand Ilema. So Ilema Miyas Mei Leisa LeRebbe Meir Adonani Nefrad Minachasim Yisomim Elam Niziboris Elalav Minei. Now, Rebbe Meir can't be talking about Ksuva from the estate, because Ksuva from the estate has to be Ziboris, meaning no one can argue on that point. Everything that the estate is paying as an old debt of their father's is done via Ziboris. We are protecting the estate. We're going to talk more about it later this morning. So when Rebbe Meir says that Ksuva Zisha's Bebeinonis, obviously he's talking about where it's not the estate, but rather it's the husband, i.e. divorce. And still, Rebbe Meir says that, not still, and Rebbe Meir says Beinonis, and what does that tell us regarding Rebbe Yehuda? Rebbe Yehuda says Ziboris. Okay, and if our thought train is correct, if our logic ladder is correct, so that means the Marzutra is not right. So the Gemara says, La'olam yasme. No. What it could be that we're talking about Yisamim v'shani ksuvas isha mishum chinah. And again, the Gemara over here makes the argument that what Rebbe Meir will tell you is that no, even though the estate only pays in Ziboris from a general principle, however, when it comes to Ksuvas Isha, they're going to be paying Beinonis according to Rebbe Meir. It's the estate. The estate is paying Beinonis? Yes. For the payout of Ksuvas Isha, they're going to be paying Beinonis. Why? Again, to make marriage more attractive to women, knowing that they're going to be paid with better property upon death or divorce, even though normally estate only pays Ziboris. But Rebbe Meir will tell you that over here, Beinonis. I'm Rabbi Tashma.
And what's the chinah? Once you die, you die.
No, but chinah over here means that we want to make the general institution of marriage. Meaning in this particular case, it's too late. In a chinami. But in other words, but let's say she only got Ziboris. So now the women are going to talk. Right? The next sisterhood meeting. So they're all going to get together. You can't imagine what happened. In other words, I got paid and I only got paid Ziboris. Don't get married. Don't do it. that's the general institution of marriage for women. Amar Abaye Tashman Izakin Shaman Lamid is Ubachov. So Abaye says, okay, we're still litigating Marzutra, and let's take a look at our Mishnah. And again, We know the scale. We know the scale. We know the schedule. So for damages, it is A. For obligations, B. For ksuvas isha, C. Okay, we know. So miman. Now we're collecting from whom? Thank you. Thank you for good grammar today. So ilay mamiyasme my ir yaksuvas isha. Afilu kol haninami. So el alamine. So it can't be that we're talking about the ksuvas isha is being paid out by the estate because then everything would be ziboris. Meaning, we're talking about damages, we're talking about obligations, we're talking about ksuvas isha. If all of that was being collected from the estate, so then everything gets downgraded to ziboris again as a general protection for the estate. So the estate only has to pay in ziboris. So over here, we're not talking about the estate. Nobody died in any of these cases. We're talking about collecting from the principal. And the principal's still alive. So the Gemara says, okay. So from the Gemara's conclusion over here, it seems like the Gemara is not supportive of Marzucha. This distinction that Ksuvas Isha is being paid from Ziboris is only when paid from the estate, but not from the husband. If the husband's still alive, i.e. the marriage ended in divorce, Marzucha wanted to argue that he's got paid Beninus, and the Gemara's conclusion seems to be no, that even if the husband's alive and he's paying out the Ksuva, the payout of the Ksuva is not through Beninus, but rather done through Ziboris. Okay. Basically, even though we just went through about 50 minutes of daf, the basic idea of the daf so far is, we didn't change from where we started. It just happens to be that Marzucha thought to make a distinction. The Gemara has so far not supported that distinction. Okay. The Gemara is still not done with this discussion. And what we're going to try to do is we're going to try to push back just a little bit. Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov Hacha ben Ma'iskina. Now, what we're going to do now is that we're going to basically limit our Mishnah. In other words, even though the Mishnah is clearly talking about collecting from the principal and not from the Yesomim, here's what we could suggest. We could suggest that our Mishnah is talking about an extraordinarily specific scenario in which our Mishnah then would be limited to that particular scenario. Okay, now, in order to appreciate and know what's going on over here, so a word about an Arev. Okay, so you have a loan and you could have somebody co-signing on the loan. Okay, in halacha, the co-signer of the loan is called an arev, it's a guarantor. And so therefore, generally speaking, a guarantor now is going to have liability, responsibility, in the event that the borrower defaults, so the arev is going to pay. Okay, so is that always going to be true? So as we're about to learn together, no, that's not always going to be true. Sometimes the arev is not going to have to pay. We're going to explain that better in just a moment. Another piece of introductory note, and that is that when we talk about an arev, there are two types of arevim. There's a standard guarantor, and then there's what's called an Arev Kablan. Arev Kablan is a super guarantor. Super guarantor where once you arrive at the level, at the status of being an Arev Kablan, so now you are going to be liable. In fact, not only are you going to be liable, but you could, as an Arev Kablan, be first in line. Generally speaking, what happens is that the borrower has to default, and then only after the defaulting of the borrower, then you go after the guarantor. When you arrive at the point of being an Arev Kablan, so now you can even jump, you could skip the line and be the first person in terms of the Mava being the one collecting the debt from you as opposed to the actual borrower himself. Okay, how do you get to the distinctive level of Arif Kablan? I guess we can even ask the question, who wants to be the distinctive level of being Arif Kablan? But if you arrive at that level, so then you are a super guarantor. Okay, with all that stated now, let's go back. Let's suggest our Mishnah may be talking about the following. Again, what we're doing right now, just to make sure that we all understand the goal, the objective of the Gemara over here, is that we are going to be given Ukimta and a Mishnah, a very specific scenario of our Mishnah, because the simple reading of the Mishnah really does not support Marzucha and Marzucha's distinction. And so now what we could do is that if we could just simply limit the scope of the Mishnah, so then Marzucha's position is not going to be attacked. Amar v'acha b'Yakov v'acha b'Maiskin shenasar Arev l'nizke b'no. So l'bachov b'no ulekzuvas kalasa. So what happens is that the father was a guarantor for any one of the obligations mentioned in our Mishnah. Okay, in other words, son, kid did damage, the kid owes. Father says, "I'm guaranteeing the obligation," and Arev on a nezek, on bachov, and on his daughter-in-law's ksuva. I.e., the father said to his future daughter-in-law, Don't worry. In other words, you feel like my kid's not going to pay you. The ksuva, when if the time comes, I'm here to guarantee it. Okay. Now, v'haikidin. So the Gemara now says. So basically, it'll go like this. Nizikin abachav de mechaim gavu inamiki magbe ke mechaim gavu magbe. So when it comes to nezik and when it comes to bachav. So in other words, can you collect from the principal while the principal is alive? The answer, of course, is yes. Same thing is going to be true with the Arev. And so therefore, when it comes to Nezik, when it comes to Bachov, Nezik pays with Idis. Arev is going to have to pay with Idis as well. Same thing is true with the Bachov. Bachov pays with Beinonis. So the Arev of the Bachov is also going to be paying with Beinonis as well. However, I know it's a long walk to get to a single point. Ksuvas Isha delachemisa gavya. But Ksuvas Isha is only going to be collected after he dies. Again, I understand Ksuvas Isha is going to be obligated on two occasions, death or divorce. And I know right now we're only focusing on death. But, okay, right now we're only focusing on death. So if the marriage ends with death, so now that is Ulachamisa Miman Gavya Miasme. So Iunami ki magbe, kilaachamisa magbe. So the so basically what we're going to say is as follows. Because the Ksuva is going to be collected in the future from Yisomim. So when it comes to the Arev, so how is the Arev going to be treated? Not based on current, but based on future. Since the Ksuva could potentially end and result in collection from the Yisomim, and since the Yisomim are going to be paying Ziboris, so therefore we're going to judge the Arev like the eventuality, not like the current. And therefore, the Arev is going to be paying with Ziboris, as opposed to Beinonis. Okay.
What's the definition of Magba?
Magba means to collect. So when collected, you're going to be collecting from Ziboris and not Beinonis. We have just taken an extraordinarily long walk to suggest that our Mishnah is not talking Kipshuto, but rather it's talking about a very detailed scenario of Arev, and because the Ksuva could potentially be downgraded, meaning this is all according to Marzutra, be downgraded from Beinonis to Ziboris via the death of the husband, so therefore when collecting for the Arev, you're also going to be collecting from the Ziboris. Okay. So typically, the Arev de Ksuva la Mishabed. So the Gemara says, wait 1 second. When you guarantee Ksuva, you know you're not obligated to pay. We're going to explain that better in just a moment. So the Gemara says, Bekablan. So the Gemara says he's not just a regular Arev, but rather a super Arev, a Kablan. Okay, I'm not going to go through right now, but Rashi right over here goes through the process in which you become a Kablan. It is complicated, by the way, because to become a super Arev, super guarantor, so there actually has to be a direct transfer from the guarantor to the lender. And over here, when it comes to the Ksuva, it gets even more complicated. Because typically speaking, in the Ksuva, there is no transfer even between husband and wife. In other words, when the husband says, I'm obligated to pay you Ksuva, right, there was no transfer of money. It's just simply an obligation that will be created upon death or divorce. So over here, what I'm going to skip over, please forgive me, is the process in which you become a super guarantor. In other words, there are two discussions to be had, two explanations necessary. How to become a super guarantor in general, and then how to become a super guarantor by the case of a ksuva. Okay, what I will tell you to do is go through Rashi. Rashi over here goes through the steps of how to become a super guarantor in general, and how to become a super guarantor when it comes to ksuva zisha. Maybe over here, so when I'm bypassing all that. Maybe over here, in other words, generally speaking, if all you are is just a regular arev over a ksuva, you're not obligated. Again, we're going to explain that better in just a moment. But when you become a super guarantor, so then you are going to be obligated. So bekablan, hanich leman damer kablan afagav deleis nechzel love mishtabed shapir elaman damer iesle mishtabed ileisle lo mishtabed ma'ik alameimar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but even by a kablan, sometimes a super guarantor is not going to be obligated if at the time of the obligation. The principal, the borrower, did not have any assets. He did not have any properties. So the kaplan is not going to be responsible. Now that, what I just said is controversial. The Gemara says there are two sides to that. But let's assume right now that even an Arif Kaplan is not going to be liable if the Lova didn't have any assets. So now if that's true, Michael Amemer, you buy Zema Bidavalay Vishtaduf. So the Gemara says one possibility is that the case under review is where the Lova did have assets, which means now the Kaplan is going to be Chayev. Over here, we're talking about father-son, meaning, generally speaking, you're right. An Ariv is only going to become liable only if the Lova had assets at the time. And if the Lova did not have assets, the Ariv is not going to be liable. However, the father is looking to help out the son, meaning that even though it makes no financial sense that you're going to go ahead and co-sign on a loan where the borrower himself didn't have any assets, why would you do that? Meaning you're really exposing yourself. Nobody would do that. Yeah, nobody would do that, but a father would do it to his son. A father would do it for his son. And so therefore, you can make the argument that even though it makes no financial sense and nobody would just leave themselves that exposed, but a father would do it for his son. Okay. That was a lot. And I admit, by the way, a little bit complicated, slightly confusing. Okay. I'm gonna simplify like I normally do. All we've attempted to do is just simply really reduce the case of the Mishnah to this very, very limited scenario where the Mishnah is only talking about a case of Arev. It's not talking about a regular case of Nezek or Bachov or Ksuvas Isha. And in the case of Arev, so there you're going to be paying Ziboris. However, in a standard case, like Ksuvas Isha, you pay Beinonis. And why do we want to say that? Because we're looking to defend Mar Zutra. I know where the Gemara is going to end on all this. We're going to end up not supporting Mar Zutra. We're going to end up refuting him. But the Gemara, in its base medrash, makes a valiant attempt to defend Mar Zutra. Mar Zutra says that Ksuvas Isha, when the husband is still alive, i.e. the marriage ended in divorce, he has to pay Beinonis. That's the position of Mar Zutra, even though the Mishnah didn't say it. The Mishnah says he borrows. Mar Zutra says the Mishnah was talking about death, not divorce. And so what we are now trying to do is see whether or not we can at least defend Mar Zutra. The Mishnah is against Mar Zutra. So what we've been doing for the last 10 minutes is limiting the scope of the Mishnah to the case of Arev. Okay. We haven't gone to the bottom line yet. It's coming. Itmar Arev Diksuva Divra Kola Mishtabed. So now the Gemara here is going to make a couple of conclusions. Number one, an Arev of Diksuva is not obligated. So, Kablan de Balchov, the Divrei HaKol Mishtabed. So the Kablan of a Balchov is going to be obligated. Okay, so number one, number two. Number one, if you want to basically encourage somebody to get married and you're going to be providing assurances, the woman and her family is a little bit nervous, right? You can afford the ksuva. So somebody comes along and says, I'm co-signing on the ksuva. So everyone agrees that halachically you're not obligated. You said you're co-signing, you're not going to be obligated. So we're going to explain why in just a moment. That's number one. Number two, an Arev Kablan on a standard loan. And again, Arev Kablan means that you're a super guarantor. Again, just to say simply, a super guarantor. So he is now going to have, a superior liability. How to become an Arev Kablan? When we get to the end of Baba Basra, we'll discuss it in more detail. Right? All this discussion of Arev are the last two or three dapim of Baba Basra. Baba Basra, an exceptionally long Masechta, right? 176 blot. So like around 174, 175, 176. So that's where all the Arev sugyas are discussed. Okay. So so Arev de Balchov and Kablan de Ksuva Pligi. What if you become just a standard Arev of a regular Balchov? And what if you become a Kablan of a Ksuva? So, Iklamanda Amr, Afagav Delaisle, Nixle Lova Mishtabed, Vikalamanda Amr, Isle Mishtabed, Ilaisle Lova Mishtabed. And over here, we have a machlokus amongst the Amoraim in terms of what your degree of liability is. Are you Mishabed yourself or no? Vihilchisa. And the Gemara says, good. So now we laid out the positions, and now the Gemara arrives at a conclusion. So, Bekula Afagav Delaisle, Mishtabed, that when it comes to an Arev, so even though the principal borrower did not have properties at the time, but if you go ahead and you're going to co-sign a loan, so you are going to be obligated. So Mishtabed, Bar, me Arev, Diksuva, Afagav, De Islay, La Mishtabed. with notable exception to that of a ksuva of a woman. If you're co-signing on the ksuva, you're not going to be obligated. My taima, mitzvu David, v'lamid chasra, because let's consider the following. Two points to consider. Number one, when you are co-signing on a ksuva, so basically what you're doing is you're encouraging marriage. Marriage is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to get married. And so there's a little bit of a concern about financial capability. Okay. So you're going to go in there and you're going to give assurances. But your assurances are not there to make you legally bound and liable. You're just there simply there to encourage the marriage to go through. The marriage needs a little push. You're pushing the marriage through. Okay. But you're not really bound and legally, financially liable, even though you said you're co-signing. That's one point to consider. And a second point to consider, says the Gemara. And that, of course, is lo chasra, meaning over here, did the woman actually lend in order for her to receive her ksuva? And the answer, of course, is no. In other words, we call the ksuva a loan, or better stated, we call the ksuva an obligation, and it is, but not in it. It's a prenuptial agreement, meaning she didn't actually give any money in order for her to receive the ksuva. The ksuva just simply is an agreement. It's a binding agreement that either upon death or divorce, here's what I'm going to have to pay you. So it doesn't operate like a standard loan. A standard loan, the lender actually gives money and then will be owed the money. Over here, the woman doesn't do so. So when you're going ahead now and being an arev on a ksuva, so you're not guaranteeing something where somebody put out money. She didn't put out money in order for her to receive her ksuva. So number one, it's a mitzvah. Number two, she didn't actually have to put out money. So because of those two considerations, if you're co-signing on the ksuva, so you are not going to be, you're not going to be liable.
Wait, one at a time.
So as far as chen is concerned, so in other words, we go back to what the Gemara taught us yesterday. Women want to get married. So yes, they also want financial security. We're balancing the two. And because women want to get married, so therefore, it would be enough for her to get Ziboris. And the Arev is not going to be obligated. When all said and done, the husband in the state is obligated to pay the ksuva. She's going to get paid. It's just now a question of how far do we have to go in order to give her assurances? We don't have to go that far. So in other words, the payout is only through Ziboris. The Arev is not going to be, is not going to be chayv to pay. So we'll cap the amount of his chayvus that's going to go towards her. Okay.
Now, it's interesting. The husband doesn't have nechosin to have to pay the ksuba, and the olive is not mishtabit, so she's left with nothing.
Currently, he has nothing. In other words, over the course of the marriage, whatever assets he gets into is going to be mishubat for the ksuva.
I mean, eventually.
In other words, there are occasions, I mean, we discussed it earlier in the Masechta, where the ksuva is not going to get paid out, but most of the time, the vast majority of the time, the ksuva is going to get paid out.
The point here was that she doesn't lose anything because she didn't pay anything.
Right.
She didn't lay out any.
She didn't lay out any money. And again, we're only speaking about the Arev. We're not talking about the Baal. The Baal and his estate are obligated to pay. We're only talking about. We're only talking from the perspective of the Arev, right? The Arev is not going to have to pay. The points over here are limited to the Arev. Okay, yeah. So Amar Ravina Tashma. Okay, so that was a long side discussion. We're going to go back to Mar Zutra. Again, Mar Zutra is attempting to make the argument. That when the payout of the ksuva is coming from the estate, so then Ziboris. But if the payout of the ksuva is coming from the husband, so then Beinonis. And the Gemara is still discussing, but here, it's going to get now to a, at this point, there will be a quick conclusion. Am Ravina Toshma Mikar Detaknitin. The Yosem Mimasha Isha Rotzalisa Isha Rotzalina Say. Okay, so. Why is it that she's only getting Ziboris? For the reason that we already articulated, the Gemara is just simply reviewing for us. Because she's already incentivized to marry. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. The Takana was done for whom? If according to Mar Zutra, it's only in the case of death that she's going to be paid out Ziboris, So that's a takana protecting the woman? No. That's a takana protecting the estate. So I don't understand the brisa that we learned earlier that says that the entire institution, the takana, was made for her. If Marzucha's right, and the only time Ziboros is being paid out is only for death and not for divorce, so then the takana is for the Yisomim. So the Gemara says, Tiyufta de Marzucha, Tiyufta. So the Gemara says, okay. So as much as we have heroically tried to defend Marzucha, the Gemara says, no, that's not the accepted viewpoint. The Ziboros payment for the Ksuva is going to be both in the case of death or divorce. Okay. Next topic of discussion today. Amar Marzucha Breder Rav Nachman Meshuain de Rav Nachman Sharchova Yotze Ala Yisomim. Okay, we're going to be spending time now, today, going over the takana of Yisomim. So what do you collect when you collect from Yisomim? Yisomim are yarshining. If they're inheriting account payables, and one of the account payables that they're inheriting, I'm sorry, all the account payables that are inheriting, so they're going to have to pay. In other words, because the estate has a shibun in which they're going to have to pay, but they're only going to have to pay using C properties, not B properties. Normally, Balei Chov get paid B properties, but the Yisomim only have to pay out C. And again, it's a way of protecting the estate. Consideration of the Gemara now. What if in the note, when the father, Alav HaShalom, when he wrote the note, he said, I'm paying you A properties. That's what he wrote in the note. And now he died, and now collection is coming from the Yisomim. It's coming from the estate. So, what is now the Baal Chov entitled to? What is he going to receive? So now the Gemara says, in the name of Rav Nachman, that in such a scenario, he's going to be receiving Ziboris. He's going to be receiving C. So the... So obviously that's very interesting. Meaning because clearly... In other words, the father, when he borrowed the money, so he created his chayvus for himself. And the chayvus that he created for himself was from a property. And interestingly, after he dies, in a way of protecting the Yisomim, so basically what the Chachamim instituted is that the Yisomim don't have to honor the father's obligation of paying out with a property. C property would be okay. The Gemara is going to consider. Amar Abayi Teda. The Baal Chov Dina Bebeinu Nesum Yasmin Bezibares. So consider now what we already learned back in the Mishnah. Baal Chov pays with Beinonis. Whenever you're playing from the estate, it's Ziboris. And so Amar Le Rava, Hachi Hashta. So Baal Chov, Dina Midarais, Beziboris, Kedula. Damar Ulo, Dvar Tor, Baal Chov, Beziboris, Shenamar, Bechus Tamod, Vaish. So Ma Dar Kol, Shalish, Lotzi, Pachush, Bekelim. So Ma Tam Amru, Baal Chov, Beinonis, Kedesh, Lotin, Odalos, Bevnei, Lovim. Gabi Yasme, Ukme, Rabbanah, Daraisa. So the Gemara says, I know I just read a lot, but I'll explain everything. So the Gemara says, look, in a regular case, in a standard IOU between borrower and lender, so borrower has to pay what min haTorah, A, B, or C? So the Gemara is citing the Pasuk. The Pasuk is in Parshas Kisaitse. So it says that min haTorah, a borrower only has to pay C. Min haTorah, right? Bachutz Tamod, where the Torah there is describing where the lender's coming in and he needs to take something in. And so he's going to be standing outside. He won't be able to go into the house of the borrower. And what the borrower's going to do is he's going to elect to bring out whatever he wants. What do people normally bring out? Right, the most inferior of their assets. Anyway, min haTorah only pay with Ziboris. What did the Chachamim do? No one's going to lend money. I'm going to lend money and I'm going to get Ziboris. I know we went over this idea yesterday, but let's say it again today. The lender's not going to lend money if all he's getting Ziboris. So what the Chachamim did is that they upgraded, they moved the method of payment from C to B. So, and with that adjustment, so it'll incentivize lending. Okay. So in other words, it's lending stimulation. We talked about this yesterday. Great. Now it can't be A, as we already discussed yesterday, because that'll only encourage predatory lending. So, but B, however, is enough where it'll stimulate lending. Good. So now when it comes to in a normal case, now the borrower died, and now we go to the Yisomim. So normally, what are we going to say to the Yisomim? You're going to be paying C. But you understand, min haTorah, it was already set at C. The Chachamim moved it up to B, but then when the Lova dies, and we go to the Yisomim, we could drop it back down to C. But it but min me ikar, I didn't start at C, right? You see that? But in our scenario, what did the father say? I'm paying you with A. He gave himself his own ischaivus of now A. This is different. And when the father said, I'm paying you with A property, so he's now obligated. Min haTorah, he's obligated to pay A. The Gemara is going to say yes. Elahacha kevin didine midaraisa beidis, afilu miasme beidis. So over here, because he obligated himself to pay idis, he somehow have to pay idis as well. Now he obligated himself to pay idis. The Gemara says, interestingly enough, it's a din daraisa that he has to pay idis. Why? So you want to talk about an interesting Rashi over here on Nochi Erevenu. Rashi quotes the pasuk from Parshas Mikates, where after Yaakov on a number of occasions said, I am not sending you down to go and to retrieve Binyamin. So finally, Yehuda says, I'm going to personally guarantee. Anochi Erevenu. Now, what exactly was he guaranteeing? Okay. And I guess the most basic question you can ask is, we don't typically learn halacha from narration that occurs back in Parshas Bereishis. But anyway, Rashi over here says, Anochi Erevenu, that is a source that when you are meshabit yourself, you obligate yourself, anything, you're a chayv min haTorah. So over here, the Gemara is bothered. If the father made his chayvus on himself to pay idis, so that is chayvus operates min haTorah. So now when he dies, so previously we said move it down to C because it started at C. But over here, if on a personal ischaivus of A, and the father dies, so what should the Yisomim have to pay? They should have to pay A.
But don't you answer this, first of all, that the Yisomim are like getting off to the loan, one honor to the father.
Good. So the Ula Rava, good. So we're not done with the discussion. So Ula Rava Vatani Avram Chosa Inafraim Minichse Yisamim Elam Nizaris Veafilo Heinizakin Vanizakin Dina Medaraisa Beidis. So the Gemara says, okay, but your argument is not going to stand, and I know that because of the following: Dad was a mazik, he damaged. Now damaging has to be paid out from Idis. We went over this yesterday. Let's say it again today. And now dad dies. So there still is an outstanding obligation, and that obligation now is going to fall to the kids, and now the kids are going to have to pay. They're going to have to pay what? A or C? They're only going to have to pay C. So you see what just happened over here. Min haTorah, dad have to pay A, and then when dad died, the kids have to pay C. Only have to pay C. So your argument of, if the Chiyuv D'Oraisa for the father is A, there's no way it can go down to C. We just saw together, it dropped down to C. The Gemara pushes back on that. And Rabbi Yishmael, he damar midaraisa b'nizak shaminan. When you take an olam, taking a rabbanan b'damazik. V'gabi yasmei ukmi rabbanan daraisa. We'll go back to what we said yesterday. And I admit it's complicated, right? But in other words, but we did this yesterday. Doesn't make it easier. It just simply means that we do it now 2 days in a row. And what's the basic idea? And that is that lands are going to be graded not objectively, but rather subjectively. And the Mazik had A and C property. The Nizak had A and C property. It just happens to be that the C property of the Mazik is equivalent to the A property of the Nizak. And so therefore, under those circumstances, according to Rabbi Yishmael, Min haTorah, Mazik only has to pay C. Then with the Chachamim instituted is, you know what? You're a Mazik. You're going to have to pay A. But my C is equivalent to his A? Yeah. And according to Rabbi Yishmael Midaraisa, that works? Sure. But as a takana, to make sure that people are just more careful not to damage, it's almost like a kanas, you're going to have to pay A. But over here, however, now you understand. The Iker Chiyuv was C. Then because of a takana, you have to pay A. And now when dad dies, and now we go to the children can go back to the Iker takana of C. In that circumstance. Okay. Ini, the Gemara says, I'm still sure I'm not with you. V'atini, Rabbi Lazar, nivta'a.
But it doesn't answer. He writes, guarantees that it's going to pay for the A.
Yeah.
That was the original question. How does that answer?
It just simply, meaning what we're saying now in our Mishnah is not a raya one way or another. Because we could be mamid, the case of the Mishnah, to the case where it's the Nizak's A is the Mazik C. And then it's not going to have any bearing whatsoever on our discussion. Gemara continues. Ini. Hatani Rabbi Elazar Nifta Ina for Minichsi Samimela Mizar Boris V'afilohein Idis. So my afilohein Idis. So when going after the estate, you only collect Zibaris. And even if there Idis, what does that mean? So, Lav Afagav Dichsiv Idis Bishtara. So presumably what it means is what we're discussing. Meaning in the case where the father was mishabed himself to pay A, still by someone you only collect C. Isn't that the pshat in the brayso alone? So my idis, shafai idis. So when we say idis over here, what we mean is that there was idis, and what happened? The idis got lost. Losing land is not easy, I have to admit. In other words, land is a kind of a hard thing to lose. I lose everything else, but it's difficult to lose land. When the Gemara here is talking about losing land, the Gemara over here is making reference to a couple of possibilities. Rashi points out. Rashi says it could be that you were thrown out of your land. It could be that your land was flooded. In other words, there are ways of losing land. Kedarava damarava, hizig zibaris, govim in a idis, that if, let's say, you damage, you have to pay from your idis. Shafai idis, if let's say you had idis properties, but they were, again, let's say, we're going to use the word lost. The word shafai comes from the word shaf. Shaf means to be dislocated. Whatever, you lost the land. So then go v'minabeinonis. So, as a takana, so now the collection is going to be coming from beinonis. V'gabi yosmei, ukmei rabbanan adar raisa. And as far as the chachamim were concerned, so in such a situation where you no longer have it as property, and now you get to go downgrade, you get to downgrade down to a ziboris, not beinonis. Okay. Another big chunk of today's daf, and we just finished discussing what happens in the situation where what happens in the situation where the borrower was mishabed himself to pay with A, even though he doesn't have to. In other words, B is sufficient, but he mishabed himself to pay A, and he dies. Are we still, as a way of protecting the Yisomim, are we still going to be asking them to pay with A, or can they just simply go back to the general halacha of estate paying old debt of the father? Only have to pay with C, not with A. Gemara went back and forth on this issue. Sounds like from the Gemara's conclusion, they only have to pay C, not A. Next discussion for today. So the Gemara over here asks a very simple question. We're protecting the estate. Now the estate could be that their children, Rachmanis, the father died young, leaving young children. That's one possibility. Alternatively, when we say estate, we could just simply mean those who inherit. But in other words, they don't have to be children, they could be adults. And over here, when the Chachamim legislated protection over the estate, are we talking about when they were minors or even when they're adults? And the Gemara goes over both sides. So, Tekanti Davar Rabbanan Gabi Yasmei. So, Lekitanim Avad Rabbanan Legedolim Lo Avad Rabbanan. It could be that the Chachamim were just simply interested in protecting children. Children are certainly not going to be in a position in which they are knowledgeable of their father's debts, and okay, we can just say it simply. They're children. And so therefore, this ability to downgrade to only having to pay C could be limited to just children. Oh, Dilma, Mishum Dilom Masika Daita Damave, Demislova Vanaflinichse Kami Yasme, Davali Noodalas, Hilka Chafilo Gedolam Nami. Or the other possibility is the following. Why does a borrower have to pay with B property? We already said it. It's to stimulate lending, okay? And if we don't move the needle from C to B, no one's going to lend money. Who's going to lend money if all they're doing is collecting C? Maybe this is the other consideration, and that is that we're going into the mindset of the lender. This is a psychological issue. In that, is a lender going to be comfortable lending money, thinking ahead? Well, what happens if my borrower dies? And now I'm going to be coming after the estate. And the estate is only going to be paying me C. is that really going to be a concern on the part of the lender? And if that's a concern on the part of the lender, he's not going to lend money. Or maybe no. Maybe the lender's not worried about that. And what the Gemara now is entertaining is the lender's not worried about that. In other words, the lender will be comfortable lending money. Generally speaking, he'll think, how is the loan going to conclude? The borrower is going to be alive and well, he's going to pay me back. And if he doesn't pay me back, then I have a lien on his properties. And the fact of the matter is I am collecting B. It's not the best. It's not the worst. And that's enough. He's going to die and I'm going to then have to deal with the estate and only collect C from the estate, which is all true, but that's not going to be enough of a discouragement where the lender's not going to lend money. And what the Gemara is entertaining is it's not going to discourage the lender. And therefore, this protection of the estate where the estate only has to pay C will be under all circumstances, whether they're children or even if they're an adult. Tashma, the Gemara says that Niyabi Kashishi Samashamru, Gedolim Ve'in Sarach Lomar Kitanim. So the Gemara says is that it is an all encompassing protection for the estate, whether they're minors or adults. Vidilmahani Mila Lin Yishvua. So, the Galdo Bemila Davu, the Kandami of Allah Ingen Zibar Islam. For a moment, the Gemara is thinking, maybe that's only true when it comes to making a Shvua, that we're going to waive any Shvua requirement, because what do they know from their father's dealings? But maybe when it comes to money, maybe no, maybe adult children, who are now, controlling the estate, maybe they have to pay Beinonis. Ve'ilchasa, the Gemara says, yeah, I know, but I'm telling you what the halach is. Whatever, the father was obligated to Shvua. And now the children, generally speaking, there's no Shvua when it comes to payment. It could very well be that,
anytime somebody wants to collect your tumim,
right? In other words, right? Right? Correct. In other words, right? In other words, in terms of not having to pay. Okay, so the Yisam Shamru Gedol Main Sarach Lomar Katan Bein Lishvua Bein Liziboris, and the Gemara says, and look, and here's the conclusion. The conclusion is that we're going to be instituting a takana that the estate only has to pay Ziboris, and it doesn't matter how old the children are of the estate. They're minors, they're adults. We're always going to look to protect and give more of a pass, if you will, on the estate. The estate only has to pay in C and not in B. And again, by the way, I know I said this yesterday, but let's just repeat and review. It does not mean that the lender is getting any less money. In other words, the lender is going to get full satisfaction of the loan in total. It just simply means that the quality of the land is not going to be a better quality. It'll be an inferior quality. And as Rashi pointed out yesterday in the Mishnah, so if the value is the same, so what's the difference? The difference is that, right, in other words, the ease of payment. Right, Noach Lola Adam writes Rashi in yesterday's daf. People are just more comfortable getting better properties than inferior properties. But the loan amount is going to be the same, right? The lender is going to get fully satisfied. It just won't be using the best of the properties, or even the mid level properties. Okay. Our last discussion for today. Okay, we're going to talk a little bit about liens on property and exercising liens on property. Okay, as far as the Torah is concerned, when I lend money and it's done bishtar and it's done with a note, so now that allows me to attach a lien to the borrower's property, and I can go ahead now and exercise a lien. However, we learned in the Mishnah yesterday as one of the takanas that's only true that I can exercise lien if the borrower has no properties on hand. If the borrower has any holdings, and even if those holdings are C properties, I can't exercise my lien on any of the other properties that were already sold. Okay? And what is the purpose of this piece of legislation? What's this takana? It's very simple. Buyer protection. We're looking at protecting the buyers. Buyers of property now who are going to what? Now have their lands taken away from them? From people who had liens? Okay. So we're looking to protect buyers. So as a means of legislation for buyer protection, so you the lender, can only exercise liens, but only if the borrower had nothing left. And obviously with every sale of every land, So obviously those the dates of the sale of the lands become very important, because who is now going to be now stuck having to have his land taken away from him? Basically the last buyer. Okay, good. Now what we're going to be discussing just for the remainder of today's daf is the following, is that we now know about this takana of buyer protection. What about gifter protection? What if instead of the borrower selling his land, what if he gifted the land? So can you go ahead now and exercise your lien on properties that were not sold, but properties that were gifted away? Now you can easily consider and think to yourself, under such circumstances, there is no buyer that we're looking to protect. Meaning if someone purchased the land, so fine, we want to protect the buyer. But over here, no one bought the land. It was gifted to him. Maybe he will not be under the umbrella of this takana. He will not be under this protection act, if you will. So, and this is what we're going to be discussing for the remainder of today's daf. So there are two sides to this discussion. Side number one, easy. Side number one is that this is a takana for purposes of buyer's protection. And therefore, we're interested in protecting buyers. The buyer, decided to give some of his land away. We're not protecting the recipient of the gift. Why do we need to? He didn't put out money for that. That's one possibility. The other possibility is that no. Do you know that incorporating every gift is going to be reciprocity? I give you a gift, right? It makes me so benevolent. Get out of here. I give a gift because there's going to be some sort of future reciprocity. Right. There's no such thing as a free gift. Okay. I know I've been saying it to my kids for years. I myself also have to understand it better, but it's true. There's no free gift. And so therefore, even as the borrower is gifting the land, even though it's a gift, but there's a reason why he gave it. There is going to be some hana that comes from having given the gift. Okay. The guy's going to owe him. Okay. And so therefore, we can, for the purposes of this piece of legislation, we can file gift under the category of sale. And so therefore, not only are we looking to protect the person who purchased the property, but even the recipient of the gift. Okay, interesting. So Amr Le Markish Shabrid Rav Chisel Rav Ashi Tashma Shchimer Asha Amar Tenu Maslam Zuz Laploni Shosh Meos Zuz Laploni Arba Meos Laploni Ein Omrim Kol Akod Nemishkar Zaka. So let's say you have a Shchimer who is just simply right before he dies dividing his estate amongst people. So we don't at this point in time look at it and say, oh, there's a sequence over here. And so therefore, when it comes to now, anyone who has got liens on those properties, so they can exercise their liens, and not in any specific order. Because as the Shchimera is dying, so the fact of the matter is that he has to talk right now, so somebody's going to get before others, but that doesn't mean that halakhically they receive before the another person. Okay. However, lefichach, yatsu alav sharchov gova mikulan. I'm sorry, not however. Sorry. Not yet. We're going to get to the however in just a moment. And therefore, if somebody's coming with a IOU, and now they're going after the recipients, so there's no order, ain't Seder. Well, you were given first, which means that the next property was held by the Shchimera at the time, so therefore I can only go after that property. In other words, no such thing. Everyone is basically on the same footing, and everyone becomes susceptible, eligible to be collected from the lender. However, now we get there. It sounds that way. Go with me, Kulan. I'm not sure if they have to split or basically, in other words, each one of them is eligible and can become a candidate. Okay, it's a fair question. I'm not sure. Ava, imam arma signs as Laploni v'acharav, Laploni v'acharav, Laploni. If the Shchimera could not be any clearer, and that is, we are sequencing over here. You're number one. You're number two. You're number three. So then, Omrim kol akodim b'shar zacha, alafichach yatsa alaf sharchov, govem in acharon. So ein lo gova milafanav. Ein lo, so gova milafnei panav. Now there was clear sequence in how the assets were going to be allocated, and it was your number one and your number two and your number three. So now when someone comes with a lien and he wants to exercise his lien, so who is he going to go after? First number three. And if number three doesn't have, then I'll go after number two. And if number two doesn't have, then I'll go after number one. Okay. Now, the Alpha Gav, Dikama Benonis, Ubasra Ziboris, Miziboris Gabe, Mi Benonis, Lo Gabe, Shmaminabe Matananami Avarabanata Kanta. And the Gemara says, and here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking that in the second half of the Brisa, where he clearly numbered the recipients, you're number one, you're number two, you're number three, I'm going to assume, says the Gemara, that we are going to, he's going to be able to go after number three, even though number two received Beinonis. Even though number three only received Ziboris. Still, we're going to say to the lien holder that you can only collect from the Ziboris. Ah. Now, all this is clearly a matana. It's a shchemira, who's gifting away his properties. And still, we're going to say that when you're gifting, we're protecting. We're going to protect number one. We're going to protect number two. Ah, so it's a raya that the our interest in protecting is even going to be an occasion of matana, not just mecher. And Achinami, but in other words, you're right. He gave them order. But in other words, but if the chachamim were not going to be masakin in the case of matana, this is the case of matana, so then he should be able to go after number two. Number three was b'nei chorin when number two received it. That's true, but number three is only ziboris. Number two is beinonis, so he should be able to go after number two. By virtue of the fact that the brisa says b'feirush that he can only go after number three, it means that we're looking to institute and be masakin. Even the case of matana, that's the whole hochach of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, I'm not so sure. So the Gemara says, no, we're not talking about matana. We're not talking about matana. We're talking about they were owed. So vahatenu kamar. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's not what the Brisa says. The Brisa says give. So tenu bechovi. So a bit of a docha, but the Gemara says, okay, but maybe the context of the Brisa was, he said give, but he owed it. Tenu b'chovi. So, v'lechvi shtari deman kadim. So if all he's doing is just paying outstanding debts, so what is he doing giving order and sequence? You're going to get first, you're going to get second, you're going to get third. I got a much better idea. And it's not just a better idea, it's the right thing to do. Well, if all the Shchiv Meira is doing is just simply paying his outstanding debts, and now it's just a question of who should get first, so aren't they all holding notes? And aren't all their notes dated? And let's just take a look at the dates of the notes. So the Gemara says, Bishtar Pekadata. I skipped a step, the Lake Ishtara. So the Gemara says, yeah, but there's no Shtar. In other words, all these obligations were Milva Peh, it wasn't a Milva Bishtar. So the Gemara says, "Va'akol akodne b'shtar kamar." So the Gemara says, "Yeah, but the Brisa says shtar." So shtar b'kadata. The Gemara says, "No, that shtar was just simply his sava, last will and testament." That, in other words, the word shtar in the Brisa was just used to describe his instructions. V'i b'aseh ma'afila matananami v'lo kasha my govim and achron ein nifsad ella achron. It could be Okay. It could very well be that we're not going to be poshate. In other words, the question on the table is: are we going to be masakin even the case of matana? And normally by matana, so what you could do is collect from the beinonis, not from the zibaris velokasha. My govim and achron ein nifsa ela achron. It could very well be that when you say govim and acharon, it means the last one that collected beinonis. Okay. Admittedly, it's a stretch. And he by saying the shavakulu la'adade, or it could very well be that the case under review over here is where all the lands were of the same quality. Meaning it wasn't Beinonis to number two, Zeboros to number three. It was Beinonis number two, Zeboros, Beinonis number three. And so under those circumstances, then we're going to go ahead and collect for number three. But en achinami, if it was Beinonis from two and Zeboros for three, and it's a case of Matana, which is, again, pshat of the Braisa, so then maybe under those circumstances, he'll go after number two, not number three. Okay, so that last part admittedly was a little bit tricky. Just to summarize the last part, it's a very simple question. The Gemara did not have a resolution. When the Chachamim were misakin, that when it comes to a Bachov, you're going to go after Nechasim Mishubadim. In other words, you have a lien and you have an ability to exercise your lien. But we learned in the Mishnah, but that's only when there was no Bnei Chorin. If there are Bnei Chorin available, so then you can only go after the Bnei Chorin, not after the Mishubadim. Why? Again, buyer protection. We want to protect buyers. So the question on the table is buyer protection going to include even somebody who didn't purchase the property, but somebody who was gifted the property? So that is the question on the table. We looked towards the Braisa of the Shechiv Merah to shed light on this topic, and the Gemara concluded, in other words, we could give so many different ukimtas in that Braisa. We can give various pshatim in the Braisa. It's not going to shed light on our question. It didn't shed light on our question. Okay, Adkan, we're going to stop over here. Okay. Number one, just as a quick review. A lot of big topics discussed today. Okay. Number one, Marzutra's distinction, or at least attempted distinction. This was a good part of today's daf. Starting on Mem Testament base, Marzutra says that when it comes to the Ksuvah Sisha being paid in Ziboris, that's what we learned in our Mishnah. So he says that's only when the payer is the Yisomim. But if the payer is the husband, i.e. the marriage ended in divorce, so then he's not paying in Ziboris, he's paying in Beinonis. Okay. That was Marzutra. After a lengthy discussion, including a lot of discussion of Arev, the Gemara's conclusion is to Yufta de Marzutra. The Gemara refuted Marzutra. The Gemara rejected Marzutra. When it comes to Ksuvas Isha is always paid with Ziboris and never in Beinonis or certainly not in Idis. That's number one. Number two. As far as the Yisomim are concerned, they're going to be paying Ziboris. Okay, as a way of providing some relief for the estate and for the orphans, they're going to be paying Ziboris. Another big discussion that opened up on Nun Amud Aleph is that what if the father went ahead and was mishabed himself to pay Iddis, and then he died. And so now with a personal liability that he put on his Iddis and after his death, are we now going to still be able to legislate and allow the estate to go down from A down to C? Okay. Another big discussion today's daf, and the Gemara unsure in terms of whether or not we're able to go down to C. That brings us to towards the bottom of Nun Amud Aleph, and then our next big question: we're looking to protect the estate. The estate is only going to have to pay using C and not B. Are we talking about where the estate is made up of minor children? Or even if the estate is made up of adult children, are we still going to go ahead and legislate that they only have to pay in C versus B? Okay, and the Gemara says there really are two ways to look at this takana of protecting the estate. Is it just simply our interest in protecting children, and therefore they only have to pay in C? Or maybe no. Maybe that the estate always pays C and not B. It's going to dissuade people from lending. So the other possibility is that lenders, generally speaking, are not concerned. In other words, this is not going to... It's not going to stir enough concern on the part of the lender where he's going to think to himself, well, what happens if my borrower dies? And now I'm going to have to collect from the estate. And I can only collect C and not B. So the Gemara says is that the lender is not worried to that degree, to that extent, and it's not going to dissuade lending. And here the Gemara arrives at a very clear conclusion. The takana that the estate that the Yorshim only play C is even when they're adults. And that took us to Nun Amud Beis. And there we asked our last big question of the day. And that is that we learned about the Buyer's Protection Act, takana, where when the Baal Chov is going and looking to exercise his lien, he has a shibud, so he can only exercise the lien if there are no Bnei Chorin. But if there was Bnei Chorin, so then he can only go after the Bnei Chorin and not after the Meshubadim. So in other words, Buyer's Protection Act. We're looking, this is a tekana to protect buyers. The question that we opened up with today is that include also Matana? The Buyer Protection Act is also interested in protecting Matana as well. And to that, the Gemara leaves that question unresolved. Meaning we thought we had a brisa regarding Shchemira that can shed light on this topic. We shed no light on that topic. Adkan.